So we're going to start with our first presentation on our agenda, which is a presentation from Professor Maffa from the University of Maine School of Law to present on Maine water rights and ownership and other state approaches. Welcome, Professor Maffa.
Thank you, Senator Chipman. My name is Anthony Maffa. I'm a professor at the University of Maine School of Law. I was asked to come today to give a little bit of background on approaches to groundwater rights in the state of Maine and kind of more broadly, and then also kind of branching off of that, approaches to natural resources in general and states' ability to get revenue from natural resource extraction activities and how that happens in the United States. And so I'm going to start with the groundwater piece, and then I'll move to the natural resource extraction piece more broadly. And what I want to do is, first of all, please jump in if you have a question as I'm going, but what I'm going to try to do is leave some time in between the two topics so we can discuss them in isolation a bit. Because they're related, but you'll see that there's some differences. So I don't want to try to wait until I'm done with all of the material. I do have a presentation, so I'll share my screen for those of you who are online. How we deal with it. Okay. So I wanted to start just by putting up this graphic, because I think it's a nice depiction of the variety of sources of and uses, sources of pollution with respect to groundwater, but also uses of groundwater. And many of these uses are things that we can find in Maine. And they're also the reason why we have to think pretty comprehensively in every state about how groundwater rights are allocated, because increasingly groundwater is used for more and more purposes in higher and higher amounts. And we have obviously concerns. I mean, I'm not a scientist or hydrologist, but there are definitely concerns about how much groundwater there is, what the rate of recharge is, et cetera. And so we're thinking about those things. And I imagine you all are talking about that in here, so I don't have to go into that in too much detail. But I did want to talk about the ways that we might think about legally dealing with groundwater. And the most useful illustration of this is with, if you imagine two landowners. And so here we have, you know, we'll call them Mr. Red Truck and Mr. Red Truck and Mrs. Blue Truck here. And Mr. Red Truck comes along and starts pumping. And if you'll notice in the depiction on the right, what happens to the water level is it goes below the level of the well of Mrs. Blue Truck. Right? So now we have a situation where this person can't, their well, their current depth of their well, their current capabilities of their well, they can't access water. And so the question is, was the Red Truck property, were they within their legal rights to pump the water that way? And different states deal with this situation differently. Right. And that's maybe you're all aware of this, and this is not news to you. But I think it may be just worth walking through for the purposes of clarity. So, that's a bit of an annoying spot, but we'll deal with that. So, the first rule is the oldest rule. It's called absolute dominion, and this rule says that anyone with a well can pump without restraint. There's no in this situation, right? There is no liability from Red Truck to Blue Truck, right? It doesn't matter that Blue Truck can no longer access the water. That's kind of, that's the way the rights are allocated. And we can just go about our business. Many states have changed that with variations on different themes. One of those themes is called reasonable use. So in a reasonable use jurisdiction, the ability of the Red Truck home to pump groundwater is limited by the type of use, the amount of use, and that use be on site. So in some reasonable use jurisdictions, you can only use the water on that site, and it can only be used reasonably. If you violate either of those, that would create liability. Right? So that's how some reasonable use jurisdictions work. Others ask not necessarily whether the use is on site, but they ask whether the use is for a quote unquote beneficial purpose. And they ask that that use cause no unreasonable harm. If the use were to cause unreasonable harm or to be for something that's not considered a beneficial purpose, that use would incur liability, right? And usually the way liability takes the form in these situations is the cost of deepening the well, the reach of the well for the first homeowner with the blue truck there so that they can access the groundwater, assuming that there is more groundwater for them to access. Compensation that allows them to continue to access water for their household needs. This is the second permutation on this idea of reasonableness being the governing factor. A related but different type of groundwater rights regime uses what's called a correlative use scheme. And what that does is, instead of talking about the red truck homeowner in isolation, it looks at the two as they relate to one another and asks for the landowners who have wells to use the water and share it equitably with other users who have wells on that same aquifer. In many correlative use jurisdictions, there's the restriction that the use remain on site also is part of it. And so we see this is a relational scheme in a little bit more direct way than some of these reasonable use ideas are. So one last version of groundwater rights uses what's called a prior appropriation scheme, which is a scheme of water rights allocation that we find more commonly in surface water allocation situations. And what prior appropriation says is whoever pumped first gets to pump that much water as long as they want. And so a prior appropriation scheme looks at sort of first in time, first in right, if you want to think about it that way. This is a relatively unusual scheme for this region of the country, but there are parts of the country where this is the way that groundwater is allocated as well. So this is kind of the background of groundwater law in the states. It's worth noting at this point that the federal government has very little to say about who gets groundwater, right? That is generally a state law issue. And there's some overlay, as I'm sure maybe you all know, of local municipal law governing what happens in particular jurisdictions with respect to the pumping of groundwater. You probably are aware of some of the disputes along those lines here in the state of Maine with respect to how groundwater is pumped in particular jurisdictions and whether that groundwater can then be sold, can those rights be transferred, et cetera. A lot of that is the intersection of state law and municipal law, but really what it isn't, for the most part, is federal law. So there's a lot of federal laws about water. You probably have heard of the Clean Water Act, right? Those things, the Clean Water Act in particular, pertains to surface waters, not groundwaters. So for the most part, it's not implicated. There's some other laws that, you know, intersect with this, the Safe Drinking Water Act, for instance, but that it has little to nothing to do with rights to groundwater and has more to do with how clean that groundwater is if it's used for drinking purposes. And so most of my discussion here has thus far been and will continue to be about state law and a little bit municipal law, but really not federal law, at least with respect to who has groundwater. So now that we have against that background, it's sort of useful to see what some of the implications of this might be. So this graphic depicts a situation where we have a water table and a rural user with a well initially engaged in pumping from that water table. Along comes a homeowner, builds a property, development happens, same watershed, pumping water for their own home use. Later, that home is sold to some kind of industrial use. And what happens when the industrial use starts pumping water is the access to the water table gets pulled way down because of that industrial user. And the question for groundwater law is often, you know, what are the consequences of that for the homeowner who has been there the whole time? And the answer to that question depends on which of those prior doctrines you are working with in a particular state. Now, across the United States, there are differences. So it's worth ignoring the sort of the DF, CF, BS. That has to do with the classification of the type of groundwater and I don't want to get too much into the details, but it has to do with the science of the aquifers in those places. What I want you to pay attention to on this chart and this map are the different groundwater doctrines that I just walked through. And as you can see, reasonable use is the dominant choice through most of the east of the Mississippi, roughly. There are only a handful of states that remain absolute dominion states. And most people that classify the way Maine treats groundwater say that Maine is an absolute dominion state. Now, I'm going to talk about why that's not entirely accurate as we sit here today, but it is the baseline that we are operating with in Maine, that is that we have an absolute dominion state. We see the prior appropriation and correlative rights finding their home in the western part of the country, which also should be sort of no surprise as those doctrines came about in that part of the world. So this is just a map of Maine's hydrology, aquifers, significant aquifers in the state of Maine. And as you can see, there's a good number of them. And so obviously this is probably why we're all here today talking about this. And so I think it's just worth illustrating before we get into the Maine law. So there's a section of Title 38 that holds a person liable for the withdrawal of groundwater in excess of beneficial domestic use for a single family home, which causes interference with the pre-existing beneficial domestic use of groundwater by a landowner or another lawful occupant. This is an interesting provision that is overlaying our absolute dominion law in the state. And I want to just highlight a few of these terms here because we talked about them already, right? So there are jurisdictions where, you know, reasonable use, beneficial use, this is the governing law. So we see we're borrowing a little bit from that with the statute, but we're also borrowing from prior appropriation a bit because notice the word pre-existing, right? So it only a pre-existing domestic use has a cause of action under the statute as it's currently drafted, right? So interference with a pre-existing beneficial domestic use of groundwater allows for a cause of action. That is a pretty limited subset of people who might be able to stop someone else from pumping groundwater. Going back to, you know, this scenario or even this scenario, if the farm, the rural user on the left-hand side wants to take advantage of this statute in Maine, they have to show, right, that they were pre-existing whatever's causing them harm and that what is being harmed is their own beneficial domestic use, not any other uses. And so how beneficial domestic use is defined under the statute also becomes important. And so the statute defines beneficial domestic use as household purposes essential to health and safety. Again, I would argue that that's a pretty limiting number of uses, right? It's not a very extensive amount. And so if you're thinking about who has a cause of action, again, it's only a person who was there before and who their right to groundwater, their access to groundwater, only with respect to their essential health and safety access is affected, has a right of action under the statute. Yeah.
Thank you, Mr. Mappa. This is super helpful. And thank you very much for coming and taking a dive into this.